Chapter 14. Vetoing the People. The politics of courts are so mean that private people would be ashamed to act in the same way. All is trick and finesse, to which the common cause is sacrificed. Admiral Horatio Nelson. Nelson, our greatest naval hero, saw through the games. He was a tough and inspiring warrior with several body parts missing to demonstrate his courage and commitment to our country and its people. We must learn from him, from what he can tell us of the fawning fools desperate for favors from the power elite. Then they were crowned. Now they are gutless, conspiring central bankers and killers of commoners. Might our elected officials just be their useful idiots? Are they really our representatives, or are they just our guardians, herding us like cattle, vetoing us after we voted for them? Do we live in Plato's world without realizing it? Are we so caught up by the world presented to us by the PR machines that we do not understand that we do live in a matrix run by the planners? You know my position now. Naturally, they have not been open about their control, but I do think that there used to be a lot more room for us to play with. The Truman Show boundaries were much wider than those trapping Jim Carrey, but the powerful have weaved a fantasy for us that is broader and deeper than you and I can imagine, and the walls are closing in. The reality is that the mass media are owned by people whose world is not connected to the masses. The longer the uber-rich families have been separated off from the majority, the more disconnected they have become, and the more the views they hold have veered away from common decency too. Look at Epstein and the people who met him. A prince, a president, and Bill Gates, the profit-making global foundation owner. Did you get an invite? No, because you could not influence policy, so no compromising photographs of you were required, but they still have much that you have done on record, from your phone, your laptop, and from the CCTV outside that club. With their private jets, gated communities, and remote mansions, they move ever further from the reality of existence for those they are beggaring and buggering. We are not their sort of people, as Tony Blair made clear about his own constituency's local politicians. Suddenly Blair turns to me and asks me to come outside the bar and makes his excuses to the Sedgefield councillors. We get outside and he gets his wallet out, pulls out a fiver and gives it to me. He says, "Go and buy them a round. I'm off. I can't stand these types of people." Beckett, Francis, Henke, David, 2004, p. 105. It's only quite recently that we were sold on representatives, but they are only there because there are fewer of them needing controlled than there are of us. You may still think that they are there for us, and some of them think so too at first, but they are chosen to do the bidding of the parties doing the bidding of the elites. Just as they have always held off the mass by taking control of education, they hold the political parties in their hands with favors and finance. Only in a hybrid do the representatives stand up for us, but that is because we have the final say. So we will start from first principles to ensure that our common cause is not sacrificed in the interests of the few of courts controlled by the elusive entitled elite. Humans are most productive when they are treated fairly, as in a proper democracy. Of course, sometimes we need a kick up the backside or a little coaching, but on balance, the average person without doubt will perform best when treated decently and encouraged by capable and experienced people. This is how it is done in the best units in the military and in leading endeavors and institutions outside of it, with capable, well-trained, and veteran operators performing at the cutting edge, leading, and being rewarded accordingly. However, this is not the norm for some closed circles at the very high end, and here I am not talking about the 1%. These are just those with talent enough to prosper, but not necessarily to control. The infinitesimal portion of the world comprised of the agenda setters at the WEF, the UN, and the other connected groups set up by the foundation funders to fashion the thinking of the 1% is where real power lies. Connections and networks will open doors and ease the path to the top. But American presidents and British prime ministers are ciphers in this world, as UK Prime Minister Liz Truss found out when she got firmly put in her place by the IMF, not by her own people, when she stepped out of line with a budget not agreed to by the superstate stormtroopers. Would Hunter Biden be the great artist he apparently is, the boardroom shaker and mover without his daddy? This nepotism is obviously natural and comes along with the instincts we retain from our evolutionary past, including those that the patrolling and culling chimpanzees demonstrate so viscerally. This is why direct democracy works best, as it brings with it tolerance and fairness, as the Swiss have found over the last 175 years. The earlier versions of the Greeks and Romans gave us a hint of how it could benefit the many by reducing the influence of the well-heeled and favored families. Through opening the doors to the many, it will allow a lot more of the voters with grit, aspiration, and talent to rise. This proved itself too well in the past for the elites, so they have fought this system with oligarchical machinations, using terror and murder to eventually hold, then turn back the tide of new blood, ending the Athenian and Roman democracies and eventually plunging us into the murky democratic age that we still live in. Be under no illusions, life can get a lot better when we see direct democracy spread out from the cantons in the Alps to encompass the globe. That process is just about to begin, but there will be resistance. I mentioned earlier that Plato's Republic is a favorite tome for those with a nose for politics. By the time Fran and Freddie make it onto the PPE course at Oxford, they are already well past that stale white male's witterings, but it is no doubt a mandatory pre-course read. Plato's system is the basis of most elite-led fascist, socialist, and autocratic systems, advocating a guardian group of gifted oligarchs to oversee the rest of us, we simple proles. You can see why the elites ensure that education systems teach that rubbish rather than have a long, hard look at the Swiss constitution. We can all see what Plato's philosophy has led to when put into effect by dynasties and vanguards, with their forces busy lashing out at the peasants with gay abandon whenever they asked for better treatment, like being considered equal human beings under the law and able to enjoy an education, a real one, the bloody cheek. But the Tudors, the elect in the Puritan families in New England, and the comrades weren't going to have any of that rubbish. Hence why Popper attacked Plato's influence so comprehensively in The Open Society and Its Enemies, Is It Not George? Plato and his like have claimed innate and timeless superiority, keeping power in their hands. So, with the bearded Greeks' plan in their mailed fists, they stuck to the blueprint. They didn't do so because it was best for all, best for advancing society and ensuring the greatest chance of happiness for everyone, but because it favors them. So, there's their most important first principle. It's all about me and mine. Historians write of our glorious past, but the reality is a lot murkier. Even Tudor ministers lined their pockets so that they could knock up those lovely mansions we can visit today. Bribes eventually cost the folk at the bottom, as monopolies and favors bought with them always end with price hikes or other hidden costs for the rest. Those well-dressed folk we see in the portraits hanging on the castle walls even included the most senior counselors and brilliant men of the era, such as Francis Bacon. Take Lord Bacon's moral guilt in the impeachment of 1620. Everybody in Elizabeth's and James's government lived on bribes, though these enjoyed the name of perquisites, New Year's gifts, gratuities, grants. Even the renowned statesman, Robert Cecil, enjoyed a pension from the Spanish enemy in return for certain favors. Carr, 2004, p. 157. Today, perquisites might be called directorships, interest, and consultancy fees. Our so-called representatives are just guarding the entrance to the sources of power, sentries for the true elite controlling the various complexes, favoring the parties with their handouts to ensure that the legislation they demand slides through, profitably undisturbed by any chance of the people voting it down. These clowns don't represent us, they represent interests whose only real interest is power with a capital P. So, our betters have almost always liked, still do of course, to see themselves as our guardians, the snobs, holding back the mobs. Yes, the same mobs that brought Hitler and Toyo to their knees and destroyed their fascist systems, and then peacefully went about using their votes to improve the democracies that they had fought to establish for all of us. Thank you sincerely, thank you. And how has that worked out, you know, for a short time with less control by the tiny real elite and more freedom and input from the mass? Well, fewer kids dying before they were five, the technological revolution, and the world being able to feed many more billions than the Victorians could ever have imagined being able to survive. Certainly Mancunians last a little past their 17th birthdays these days. It seems that getting the people on board made for more democracies, more people, and more of everything for a lot more of us. So, there is the possibility to create more and better, and this is the huge benefit that real democracy has over any other system, except for the few hacked-off money monopolists and mercantilists used to hogging the easy money and squeezing out competition and innovation. I remember a book I bought by the American multi-billionaire Koch brothers. Its description of the economic system was pure boilerplate, but they seemed to forget the bit about their being caught defrauding clients left and right, or how their lobby money spent on an industrial scale helped. As Dark Money noted, a Coke industry employee had testified in a 1999 trial about their rip-off methods. They were just mismeasuring crude oil from the Indian reservations as they did all over the U.S. If we sold a barge with 1,500 barrels, you'd say it was 2,000. It all involved weights and measurements, and they had their thumb on the scale. Mayer, 2016, pp. 136, 137. And the outcome? The white-collar guys only get fined. Initially, $200 million. As their own brother said of them, they are the biggest crooks in the oil industry. Mayer, 2016, p. 137. Nice family. Got foundations and can spend hundreds of millions in the elections to get regulations written to suit them. Easily done when Forbes, back in 2015, reckoned that Charles and David Koch were each worth over $41 billion. Mayer, 2016, PP Kier 337, 338. Our own Branson was caught tax dodging and, like the Koch boys, spoke of lessons learned, blah, blah. The lesson we used to learn was, don't get caught. But what did these guys learn? Branson shared his hard-earned wisdom about Brexit. Branson's post-referendum gloomstring made big news, yet the stock market bounced back strongly, bank shares rose, growth increased, and employment reached a record high. He was so comprehensively wrong, you wonder how this booby ever made a bob on investments. Let's 2017 P. 198. Maybe this is how Branson's Virgin trains are expensive. They are airless, cramped, have stinking carsies, and like other railway operators, flush away billions of pounds in public subsidies. Let's 2017 P. 197. Freedom to think and create gifts us all types of new opportunities, whilst autocracy crushes innovations or funnels successful ones into the hands of the favoured few. Most of the advances we have seen in the last century came from those living free, and even that was in a system constrained by design. It was originally allowed to fire on four cylinders, however, as the direct fuel feed from the people has been increasingly restricted and fed through a compromised representative filter, we have lost output and are now lucky if we even fire on two. So how will we do when the fuel filter cannot hold us back, firing on all cylinders like the Swiss? Supercharging the engine of democracy with direct feed, boosting performance and the people's involvement in the development of their societies and their families' future is the future, one demonstrably better than any other ever practiced anywhere. This is the secret of the people's veto, the political and practical end of the elite's control. One vote away, if you dare. A demonstration of the limitations of the self-anointed and self-congratulating elite is in order, and the evidence comes from a WWEF event. It involves a recently divorced fellow who was associated with an infamous child procurer and who appears to get involved at high levels in everything from bites to bugs. Bill Gates and his wife at the time, Melinda, were presenting in Davos alongside the author of Factfulness, Hans Rosling. Rosling was demonstrating the prevalence of ignorance in the sense of our common lack of knowledge when looking at the world and everything related to it. He was gauging the ignorance of the gathered masters of the metaverse at a WEF chinwag in January 2015, and these chumps revealed precisely why a decision benefiting from the experience and wisdom of the whole nation is something that I am a lot happier to accept than that of a limited groupthink clique of entitled narcissists. Rosling had three questions, one concerning poverty, another on population growth, and wait for it. About vaccination rates, not enough, they cried. How do you think things went for our thought leaders? Well, on the last two important questions, they still did worse than the chimps. Here were people who had access to all the latest data and to advisors who could continuously update them. Their ignorance could not possibly be down to an outdated worldview, yet even they were getting the basic facts about the world wrong. Rosling, 2019, p. 12. So if chimps were just pulling levers at random, they would have beaten this lot. Do you still want credentialed cretins and the representatives they have pocketed, speaking off the record, Chatham House rule, old boy, to have the final say when our freedoms and liberties were paid for in blood by all of us, not so much by them? Some of you may recall the story of long-term capital management, a money-spinning operation led by two Nobel Prize-winning economists. Got to do great, right? Well, it tanked, losing so many billions in 1998 that the US government had to intervene to save the rich again. Socialism for them, but not for your small and medium companies. One rule for them, etc. What a great demonstration of the over-credentialing of the elite and the prizes they award each other. These backslappers are almost as in love with themselves as their booster lovies in Tinseltown, but at least the thespians know that they are reading lines written by others. Most of those entering politics don't realize that they are just the supporting cast, there to fill the stage and give the impression of action, just another distraction for the voters. Do you need further evidence of the know-nothingness of the clerisy and their poor record of money management? Can you recall Bernie Madoff making off with their money? They couldn't recommend good old Bernie enough. They were lining up to invest with the money-making magician, chairman of the NASDAQ at one time. Couldn't be better. Well, billions later, it turned out it was just another Ponzi scheme, but he managed to rope in the highly educated and moneyed rubes. Then we have the 2008 crash. A lot of that was due to the rating agencies giving good grades to crap products, bullshit baffling their brains just as easily as it does others, it seems. Maybe this is why we need to allow the big decisions affecting all of us to be made by all of us. I think so, and I hope that by now that you do too. How many more trillions of the conjured out of nothing bets of these central banking clowns are coming home to roost now? When I was a youngster, we used to laugh at countries printing money when they went broke, their pockets rifled and empty. Now, it's us. Have the lot calling themselves central bankers and global leaders no shame? I heard one talking about the banking problems of the Victorians and how this had been tackled by the establishment of central banks. In truth, within a few years of the Cabal's conference at Jekyll Island and the setting up the Federal Reserve, we had the two bloodiest wars in history and the development of weapons of mass destruction, including biological ones, which appears to account for the recent panic and growth of state power. Remind me again of the benefits to the world of central banking versus decentralization. Oh yes, the bankers and their corporate sidekicks get rich on the back of money eased out of the pockets and the futures of the public. And the people? Who cares? Without skin in the game and leverage controlled, the private central bankers always overreach. Just as politicians must be held to account by the people's veto, the bankers need to have their feet held to the fire by losing their money when they back the wrong horse. Without the moral compass of the average person, the clever psychos and greed-enabled banker class will continue to plunder unless there is oversight by us. The central bankers believe that they sit atop the pile, handing down directives to nations and peoples based on their great wisdom and infallibility. Go read Popper, Clowns. Without humility, they need hobbling, or they will continue to feast through bad times and good, never getting the axe, stumbling upwards from one crisis to another, hollering, munching on canapes, and supping cocktails at their blether-fests at five-star resort hotels, all the while shafting us, as Adam Smith warned. A canny fellow Scot, by the way. If you want to really understand economics today, I suggest browsing through anything by Nassim Nicholas Taleb, famous for Black Swan. But anything by him is worth your time. David Cameron met him when in office, but soon got back to towing the party line of the groupthinkers and the connected. The answers are out there, but you generally won't find them in books coming out of the mainstream publishers, but Taleb is good enough to slip through the net. Unfortunately, even he and those like him get swamped in the babble, escaping from the orifices of the approved airheads and bankster shills. Back in 2016, James Rickards published The Road to Ruin, The Global Elite's Secret Plan for the Next Financial Crisis, Rickards 2016. That's the one that we can see on the horizon right now. From what I have seen, the British must be brought back under the globalization planner's control, especially after Brexit showed that our revolting people might still worm their way out from under the jackboot. Trump's victory confirmed that the virus could spread and that populism, that is, a democracy run by all for the benefit of the many, was still within reach. However, when trust plumbed for national control of our own economy, the bankers showed their teeth. Rickards had something to say in 2016 about how this type of thing works out. He has advised the White House, the US Department of Defense, and the CIA. So let's look at Rickards' guide to how the bankers and their cronies present things to us. The World Tax Plan is not called the World Tax Plan. That's too obvious. Technical names are given to these plans to obscure intentions. World money is the special drawing right because that's suitably anodyne. The World Tax Plan is called BEPS, which stands for Base Erosion and Profit Shifting. If you see reference to OECD BEPS, just think Elite World Tax Plan and you're on the right track. Rickards 2016 PES 75. That looks a lot like the totalitarian language Orwell warned us to beware of, and as Rickards is a man on an advisory board at Johns Hopkins University and facilitated the Pentagon's first ever financial war games exercise, it might be worth taking him seriously. Let's see what else he has to say that might be worth noting by any conspiracy analysts out there, in particular, his description of how the power elite might respond. Bar to the next financial crisis. Instead of reliquifying the world, elites will freeze it. The system will be locked down. Of course, ICE-9 Rickards' code word for the emergency will be described as temporary, the same way President Nixon described the suspension of dollar-to-gold convertibility in 1971 as temporary. Gold convertibility at a fixed parity was never restored. The gold in Fort Knox has been frozen ever since. Rickards, 2016, P23. So what might we be facing? A global financial crisis, worse than any before, is imminent. A liquidity injection of the kind seen in 1997 and 2008 will not suffice because central banks' balance sheets are stretched. There will be little time to respond. ICE-9 account freezes will be used to buy time while global elites convene an international monetary conference. They will attempt to use special drawing rights, SDRs, issued by the IMF to refloat the system. Ricard's 2016 P53. Having destroyed the system, the banksters may create money out of nothing using a new ruse, an international front, the IMF in this case, to cover their failure and to distract the plebs, and you. Guessed it, the boondoggle will continue, but this time using the IMF's soon-to-be-infamous SDR print shop. Digital, of course. SDRs were created by the IMF in 1969 to remedy a decline in confidence in the US dollar. The goal was to create a reserve asset that was neither a dollar nor gold, but a hybrid. By 1973, the original link to gold was dissolved. SDRs were now just another form of paper money printed by the IMF. Still, the SDR remained. Some observers believe the SDR is backed by a basket of hard currencies. It is not. The basket is used solely to determine the SDR's foreign exchange value. There is no hard currency backing. SDRs are printed at will by the IMF subject to the concurrence of the IMF Executive Board. Rickards, 2016, PPS 68, 69. Mr. Rickards details how the SDRs are ideal instruments for the central banker's next cock-up. In the coming collapse, the financial system will first be frozen because central banks are unable to reliquefy the system as in the past. The G20 will convene an emergency meeting, as happened in November 2008, and direct the IMF to reliquefy the system with SDRs. Another money-from-nothing creation. Don't you love guys in suits messing up and sorting things out with this creative accounting stuff? Fraud in normal language, but with a suit on, saving the economy. If successful, banks and brokers will gradually reopen. Customers will be allowed to access cash. Transactions in cash and securities will still be denominated in dollars, euros, and yen. Behind this curtain of success, the world will be a different place. The SDR, not the dollar, will be the reference point, or numeraire, for world trade and finance. Rickards, 2016, PPR 69, 70. So, there you have it. The global coin, the single currency, the world as one. Utopia has arrived on the back of disaster, but maybe without the cash. How lucky for us that some totalitarian thinkers are now in charge, able to make everything right under one law. Well, that bit may take a little longer, but who needs our consent? Do they care? Do they see another century ahead with their snouts in the trough? The Fed was set up in 1913, so not a bad run before they morph into the Interfed, so there's life in the old dog yet. By the way, if you thought gold was your savior, check out FDR's Executive Order 6102 of 1933, the government's 41-year-long gold grab. Australia and the UK have had restrictions too. VAS, 2020. Ask yourself, if they don't need our consent for their global cash grab, what does that make us? I bet you thought you were free if you lived in a representative democracy. You're not, you're under party control. It is just that they swap around sometimes. The CCP just doesn't bother wasting time with the swapping bit, which does require some culling, but they are used to doing that, with representatives being so weak that they take the knee to corporate-approved rebels like BLM. One must ask, what spine will they show in their confrontation with the CCP? The Chinese generally flourish wherever they live and are in the leading ranks of the educated and wealthy in many nations around the world. This demonstrates the strength of their family-centered culture. However, the nepotism this can lead to makes for great corruption in their homeland, a communist regime with a uniquely capitalist twist. China's corporate communism has seen the most incredible growth rates of any economy in history, and this has been driven by the work ethic, intelligence, and entrepreneurialism of the Chinese and the mendacity of our leaders. The investment China attracted, largely at first from overseas Chinese, led to the loss of industries once employing tens of millions in the West. All this was done with only a small number of our investors gaining an advantage, and while cheap goods to some extent balanced the losses, this has proven to be a poor return overall. Stuart Patterson's 2018 book, China, Trade, and Power, Patterson, 2018, is a truly enlightening but tragic read, covering Western leaders and our economic brain trust's failure to outsmart the cunning commies. As Patterson notes, with the Chinese gaining full access to the WTO in 2001, we have seen the world transformed. Perhaps the most damning interpretation of the consequences of China's accession to the WTO and the policy of unconditional economic engagement with China is that accession not only acted as an endorsement of a totalitarian regime, but by providing a platform for economic success, it perpetuated it. Patterson, 2018. Thus, our representatives agreed to sell out our poorest to enrich totalitarian killers who now lock up their own billionaires and ignore WTO rules protecting our intellectual property rights. My old security group had a Singaporean entity that negotiated with the Chinese to provide guarding services, but this required all processes, procedures, and technical manuals to be handed over to them, that is, the CCP, the owners of the empire. In addition, every Western car manufacturer operating there hands over the family jewels to the killer elite, the intellectual property of the West's leading industrial giants given over to the global experts in dissimulation and disinformation. Before China was allowed to join the WTO in 2001, I spent almost 3 weeks visiting several cities across the country. I remember the vast difference in development that there was between China and the former Soviet Union, in which I lived and worked at the time. Roads, railways, and residences were so much better, and it was difficult to see what was communist about the place. That is, until one went off the selected route of the tour party, then the panic showed what was different. However, the real significance was that China was developing swiftly before joining the WTO. It has always remained an authoritarian communist state with a plan to undermine the West, so how was it in our interest to help destroy our industries whilst building theirs? In a battle between Sun Tzu and von Clausewitz, we came second. Maybe we needed to study Machiavelli a little more. Old anti-communists like me were just too cynical for the dupes in the West who were suckered in by an extra couple of percentage points in the profit column for a while and at a civilizational price. Patterson makes the point that we must demonstrate why the West is better, not just to the Chinese people but to all those nations watching this conflict. However, the representative system has been completely hollowed out and is now just a husk being devoured by the money men, so we need to get a grip soonest. Only the hybrid system shows how real democracy works, benefiting not only the voters, but the nation and its economy too. Imagine a world with many Swiss-style democracies, with contented voters, robust economies, and education systems designed to draw out the best from all children. This is not a paper utopia, it's the result of a 175-year-long reality test. The commies in China demonstrate what Marx and Engels' manifesto led to, and that came out exactly 175 years ago, too. How much more proof does the world need to make the decision, hybrid, or resource-raping representative, or commie? The test period is much longer, and the evidence of the outcomes is much clearer than even the most stringent pharmaceutical test ever undertaken. With our countries adopting self-rule, reducing the influence of crooked and unaccountable elites and global institutions, we can grow and build back our reputations with the developing nations that are now so in hock to China. Patterson makes the point that our WASC leaders have catastrophically failed us. Only now, With the rise of President Xi and the very public changes to the Constitution, has the mainstream media given this failure the attention it deserves? Even now, faced with the indisputable evidence that China has not moved in the direction intended and will not do so in the foreseeable future, there is a noticeable reluctance to draw the lines of culpability or to acknowledge the very real and dramatic economic costs to the West that the failed attempt has already entailed. Patterson, 2018. And what does our future look like if we fall under the influence of totalitarians like the CCP? In our case, maybe under a local imitator, a pathetic mini-me Xi, squeezing out the marrow of our rights until they can crush our hollow bones, stamping on our face again and again. Only courageous fighters willing to protect our blood-soaked rights deserve our vote, not the craven cronies we see filling our talking shops. Don't forget that the former Prime Minister David Cameron tried to establish a fund with these genocidal schemers. Great optics, Dave. Maybe that's why you are a footnote. Patterson notes that we can do without the CCP, but they cannot do without us. If you need proof of their corruption, look at what you get when you have canny, corporate-controlling totalitarians in charge. In China, the top 10 lawmakers have a net worth of $185 billion. In the US, the top 10 are worth $1.9 billion. So the CCP is 100 times worse than the insider trading, allegedly US scallywags. Patterson, 2018, p137. Is that what you want? Avoiding both is only one vote away. Go on, you know it's the way to go. Take control. One final word on the mistakes made and the culpability of those who sold us out. These mistakes, perhaps born of hubris and naivety, were compounded by those conceived in panic, fighting the deflationary impact of one policy mistake by trying to engender inflation through credit expansion has compounded the error to the extent that any change in direction runs the risk of being extremely painful to the point of jeopardizing the West's political and economic system. Underlying these mistakes, however, was a close and at times pernicious relationship between big business, high finance, and the political class in the West. The legislative process was purloined by those whose interests lay in the continuance of the economic architecture that was serving their institutions and interests well, but their countries badly. Patterson, 2018, p. 148, 149. We used to call them traitors. Today, our guardians do have ideas that they want us to adopt. As ever, these must divide us and thus make us easier to control, pushing unpalatable ideas that were unacceptable in the past and coaxing whole sections of the population into accepting them as the done thing. The world's largest financial operators now demand that companies adopt their recommended advertising and management policies if they wish to receive funding and investment. This is why adverts on telly in the UK now contain massively disproportionate numbers of non-whites in a largely white nation. Isn't that cultural appropriation? Isn't that racist? Why not? Ah, they are the right colours. There's only one that isn't. So the independence of all our major corporations and institutions is slipping away, along with our personal freedom, and all because an unelected group of troubled people is demanding obeisance to their vision, enforced through the rules of these secretive financial emperors, or gods, as Soros has said of himself. Bernays made it fashionable for women to smoke, now it's to eat bugs and live in a cold room, not a house, a room, maybe you can share it. All this is to make the world a better place, you see, but for whom? This is why you must not offend fact-checkers who can't write grammatical sentences, even when you are a doctor writing an article in the oldest medical journal in the world. The world has not gone mad. It has just found that the old ideas of long-dead intellectuals are being used by the controllers to present select arguments that favor them. Think global, not local. The end of nations, that is the aim, and anything that serves this madness is good to go. Just ignore the Swiss solution. Think Somalia, that's the future. Go ask the Ukrainians how great things have been since the chino-panted Yanks began interfering. When the trans ideologues see Tavistock shut down, the money men don't care. They just move on to another means of directing opinion. Tough luck on the mutilated, desperately depressed kids and regretful adults. These permanently remote, hidden hand jobbies have absolutely no real interest in the niche that is trans ideology. They just find it useful. The only promise that I make to the elites is that the democratic accounting is one vote away. Once we have control, we will all be free and equal under the law. Not a bad outcome for all of us, even for the gophers. Ask the rich Swiss when you are in Davos.